This episode of The Jury Show is brought to you by Absolutely Nobody. When you get told that it is time yet again for your favorite part of the week, it is the Justin Robert Young Podcast Experience Jury. Just between me and you, since, you know, we pals, we friends, we kinfolk. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You might be pretty damn ugly by most people's standards, but you're all right by mine as Jomo and his possum posse sing. Because there's a safe spot for you right here in the bubble that is the Justin Robert Young Podcast. All are welcome under the sea where life is greener. Take it from me. I got a bunch of stuff I want to get off my chest. This is a hell of an episode. And this is an episode that is dedicated to you. You. If you're watching this, if you're listening to this, this is dedicated to you. And granted, all of them are. I've been very, very upfront. This is a community show. This is a show in which I'm talking to you and I expect you to talk back. But this week, bowled over by some of the response and the community that is sprouting up around this show. It really is amazing. And I'm going to keep talking about it until it's not something to talk about anymore. We got a real insane bonanza of mail that came in. I'm going to talk about BoJack Horseman, which I was going to talk about last week, and then I didn't because Eric was in town. I'm going to talk about Patreon because we just launched one for weird things. But I want to just have a Patreon discussion in general and user crowdfunded stuff discussion because I think it's certainly something that needs to be reevaluated. It's become a part of our lives. Let's just have a little bit of a discussion on what is expected by us, the content creators, and you, the listeners. You know? How awkward is it getting hit on by women? And this is something that we're gonna bring up. Because I want to hear from the ladies. I've heard from a lot of dudes. Granted, probably the vast majority of everybody listening right now has a dick. It's fine. It's fine. I have a dick. Ain't no shame in your game. I'm saying I want to hear from the ladies on this. But before we get into any of that, I want to talk about Gamergate. Gamergate. Again, something that we talked about last week. We played our own little rodeo for our modern times. I was dressed up in my clown makeup and my baggy pants as we played the game. How long can I explain Gamergate before my little brother, who is not an internet denizen, so to speak, has his face completely glaze over and falls asleep on the show? And we came perilously close to it, by the way. But I got two uncomfortable truths about Gamergate. And I think I've made my opinion fairly clear last week. But there's two things that are kind of happening that I want to address. I want to just talk about. The first is probably the lesser of the two. But you have people who are on the side that I agree on. Because let's take a bit of a meta view on this. There's a lot of people out there that are that, and they've talked to me on Twitter after I talked about it on the podcast last week, and I've made a couple jokes on the internet. People have said, hey, listen, actually, it's about ethics and video game journalism, which is a very funny meme to me. But they have passionately defended their point of view by saying this is about bullying and entitlement by way of the media. Media, let's define video game media as Kotaku and Gawker Media and, you know, a couple of the big blog players. And that anybody who does stuff that is just straight out angry or hateful or misogynistic, they do not represent the movement. They are just fringe players. Now, I'm not going to get into the debate on how legitimate all that is, right? I do want to get into this debate. I agree with the side that I'm going to criticize, because that is important. It's important that you criticize people on your own side. It makes your side stronger, not weaker. If when you see something that's going wrong, you don't just point to them and say, no, they don't represent us. You actively criticize them and you look to root them out. So two things have bothered me. On this, my side of this ideological argument, you've seen a lot of people say social justice warrior, SJW, which is used derogatory put down by hashtag Gamergate people against people who believe, I don't know, who are on the other side. And you have people say why it's so stupid that social justice warrior is used as a put down. What is bad about the term social justice warrior? And I'm not here to tell you that there's something bad about that term. I'm here to tell you why they're making fun of it. It is not a bad term. It is a mockable term. Why? Because warrior is a very specific term. It's a very specific descriptor. Many years ago, there was a tight end then playing for the University of Miami named Kellen Winslow. Kellen Winslow said that, or compared himself to a soldier while playing football, college football. Said he was a soldier. And he was mocked relentlessly for it. Why? Because being a soldier is different than being a football player. And although there is a lot of military iconography that is brought into both the description and the practice of football played at that level, it is certainly not the same thing. So he was rightfully made fun of. That being said, he still is putting his body on the line. Every time he takes a snap, somebody could hit him so hard that it would give him dementia. That's something that we are learning more about that game. So it takes an element of bravery. When somebody mocks the term social justice warrior, what they are doing is mocking the term warrior to define somebody who primarily blogs or retweets about a cause. There's not a ton of buy-in to that. Now, not to say that's not important. I'm not saying it doesn't have its place. I'm just saying that when you put warrior as a descriptor for it, it is outsized. The description does not match the pound for pound element of what you are doing. Therefore, you open yourself up to mockery. So that's why people say social justice warrior in a derogatory way, and it has caught on. It's not just people just randomly appropriating a word. It's mockable for a very specific reason. Here's the other thing about Gamergate, my side of Gamergate, that I have found a little annoying. And again, I'm doing my part. I am going and I'm speaking my mind to my own side. And I hope that anybody who's listening to this, instead of just saying they don't represent us, that you take the same step. Because I would hope that. That's what, if I were just happened to be on your side of the intellectual divide, I would want to take steps and I would voice a voice against people who were doing things that were hurting the momentum of my cause. Here's the second thing that bothers me. I've seen more and more people describe this as a battle against progressive ideals. Progressive ideals. The slow morphing of this into a political issue. So conservatives are on one side and liberals are on another side. I find this incredibly damaging and very misguided. Because to make something as basic and fundamental of human decency as we shouldn't be violent or misogynistic or threatening toward women for voicing their opinion. And again, we are only talking about, let's even define it as the fringe elements of Gamergate. To politicize that is horrifying to me. Because now you can say, well, I don't agree with the way that Democrats have handled health care. And you are lockstepping that with, I am also against women, or I am for women getting harassed online. And I think that's so damaging. It is so corrosive. It is so short-sighted that I hate it. I hate when it is defined as an attack on progressive ideals. This is not about progressive ideals. This is about human decency. This is about, let's try to stop a culture of women just getting fucking harassed online. I mean, Jesus. Jesus! To use the Botchamania quote. I can't imagine something less political. This is cultural. This is not political. And it bothers me when it gets described like that. We got a hell of a show here for you. I'm going to talk, I'm going to get a big rubbery boner about BoJack Horseman right after this. Does anybody not have Netflix? Is that still a thing? Do people who don't have Netflix, do they still exist? I would like to talk to them if they do, because I really want to sell them on this thing called Netflix. It's really great. It's amazing. They come out with these fun shows, and I really think you should watch them. One of them is called BoJack Horseman. I said on Twitter that I was going to give a big sloppy wet kiss the old BoJack Horseman on this show, and I wound up not doing it last week, so I'm going to do it right now. I'm not going to make it too long, but I am going to make it very passionate. Passionate. I believe that BoJack Horseman is the best original series that Netflix has ever done. Yes! Including House of Cards. Yes! Including Orange is the New Black. Yes! Including whatever the Eli Roth werewolf show is. I believe this is the case because it is aggressively defining what makes a Netflix cartoon different than other cartoons. At the end of the day, Orange is the New Black is a very worthy and compelling successor to other shows by Jenji Kohan, like Weeds. House of Cards is a very compelling show that probably could have been on HBO and very likely could have shown up on HBO. But it's like, if that were on AMC, if House of Cards was on AMC and Mad Men was on Netflix, it really wouldn't be all that different. You know, they are both really compelling shows that do things that we've seen done before, done in a really cool way. BoJack Horseman is something different. BoJack Horseman is not like other cartoons for adults, although it certainly has all the trappings of one. It has the trappings of a Venture Brothers. It has the trappings of a South Park. It has the trappings of anything else that you might see on Adult Swim. What is different is this. there are many episodes that are very dark and not in a we're dealing with dark subject matter in a light kind of way dark, which is how you see on shows like Archer, for example. No, they're just out and out really depressing. It's a show about mental health. And the mood of it swings wildly. You have an episode where our main character is visiting a friend who is in his last days dying of cancer. And then it swings wildly to introduce a character that's three kids standing on each other's shoulders, Little Rascal style, in a gigantic overcoat that everybody believes is a adult human. It's amazing. And I've never seen a show, cartoon or not, do that. So to that, and everybody involved in BoJack Horseman, I salute you. I say you have really, really, really gotten ambitious with your project and you have succeeded on almost every level. Two other honorable mentions. Number one, you also got the best work out of Keith Olbermann I have ever seen in my entire life. I have watched Keith Olbermann much of my adult life. He has found his way into my regular viewing habits many times. When he goes full Olbermann, he plays a whale, a news anchor whale, and he goes full, like, you should be ashamed, sir, full Olbermann in the second episode. It fucking slayed me. And it showed me a dimension of self criticism to Keith Olbermann that I thought he was fairly incapable of. That made me feel better about Keith Olbermann. And number two, there's something that I'm curious about. It's nothing new to understand that actors often portray roles that reflect what they are going through in real life. They use real life tragedy or real life events to frame the idea that you are watching a character that might be in a similar situation. Makes you feel a different way, maybe more invested in it. If you can understand, like, for example, let's just use, if somebody's just gotten, just had their father die, and then they star in a movie 6 months later where their on character or on screen father dies, you then look at that performance different. I really wonder whether or not part of my enjoyment of BoJack Horseman is that Will Arnett has very publicly gone through a divorce. He has seemed to be, in the public eye, somebody that's, you know, kind of sad about it, a bit melancholy, and is funny on top of it. And this is a very complex role, and I think it might be heightened by that idea, which is very odd. Because you don't really think of, like, oh, he got divorced. That's going to be great for his career. But yet, if it helped my enjoyment of that show, maybe it is. It's a weird, fucked up, unintended consequence. Here's an unintended consequence. You ever start a Patreon and then feel bad about it when you should feel good about it? Want to hear about it? I'm going to talk about it. Here we go. So we just launched a Patreon for Weird Things. If you've never listened to the Weird Things podcast, I beseech you, good sir, please listen to the Weird Things podcast. It's something that I have such gigantic amount of fun doing. It's with Andrew Main and Brian Brushwood. It's delightful. I'm really excited that we're launching a Patreon because there's a really unique fan base around that show, and I'm really glad that they're going to be able to give back, and we're going to be able to give back in kind, you know, that we're going to be able to turn that money into more opportunities, those opportunities into just a lot of really, really fun product for everybody to enjoy, even if you don't come, you know, contribute to the Patreon. It's a good thing all around. But I feel like we're at a point where, you know, as a creator, you start to feel a little weird about Patreon. Not in any kind of bad way, but just in a, you know, I saw somebody in the chat room when we were doing the Weird Things podcast that said, Brian, this is your third Patreon. Now, I don't know if what he meant in tone was that that's too many or you are being too aggressive, but it's certainly how I kind of read it, which really says more about me than it does about the person writing it. However, it is something that I think about. I think about, you know, are we being too onerous? Or are we being too forward in asking people that, you know, might not have a lot of scratch? You know, there's a lot of people, you know, going through hard times, if you will. When your favorite podcast makes another Patreon, that's hard times, daddy. When you're out there and you can't make rent, and then all of a sudden the Weird Things podcast asks you for $1 a month, that's hard times, daddy. But I do think, ultimately, I come to the idea that this is not for everybody. This is for somebody who wants to kick in. And also, I want you guys to know that there's no expectation. There's no expectation on my part, you know, what the Patreon should be at, what it will be at. I do try and stop. But I don't try to overlay a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, right now we're doing a push on the Daily Tech News Show Patreon, so I can come on. You know, this is going to – the Weird Things Patreon, I'm only discussing here just because I want to talk about Patreon in general, and that's kind of the news hook. But, you know, I try to not let it overshadow things. I don't want it this to ever be about – you know, whether or not you're giving too much or enough, or we're not giving too much, or you know, that there's any kind of expectation. I just want it to be something that allows the shows to get better. So this might be a little bit rambly, right? And I don't quite know if I have all of my thoughts on this. It was just something that I had a lot of visceral reaction to while we were launching the Patreon. I just wanted to talk to you guys about it here. Why would I want to talk about Patreon on this show? Why do I say that this episode is brought to you by absolutely no one at the very beginning of the show? Why would I be feeling guilty about having multiple Patreons? No reason. We have viewer mail next. If you would like to email this show, it is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. I beg all of you, please put J-U-R-Y in the subject line. J-U-R-Y in the subject line. I found a bunch of amazing emails that I would not have seen otherwise if I hadn't just randomly decided to do a deep dive through my inbox 2 days ago. Make sure that you use J-U-R-Y in the subject line. Everybody, no matter where you are, if you're riding the bus to work, stand up right now and scream J-U-R-Y in the subject line. Thank you very much. This first one comes in from Liam. Liam says, I fail a lot. We talked about failures last week on the show, and holy shit, do we have a lot of failures. But this is something different. I fail a lot, but one thing I definitely failed at was being brave and taking the plunge to ask a girl out. I failed big time, and I learned some lessons and can say that I am better for failing earlier and understanding my mistakes. Thanks from Liam. Now, it's not exactly a exotic failure, right? However, I did want to bring this up because I want to hear from the ladies. Yes, I want to hear from women who listen to this show about the most awkward experiences where guys hit on them. Because I feel like my life is very saturated by the male experience. The nervous male approaching the female who either decides to engage with him or brush him off. And we could all, if we share a similar like-minded worldview, be better off by getting the other side of that coin. So ladies, if there is, I can almost guarantee that there is at least four women who listen to this show. So I want at least four emails from women this week about what it's like to be hit on by a guy awkwardly or awkward experiences of being hit on. That is the big call to action for the jury show this week. Go ahead, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Jury, J-U-R-Y in the subject line. Let's get into some sex advice because apparently I am the fucking sexpert, as Keith Relish writes. I thought you might enjoy my jacked up sex quandary. As crazy as the story is, it's 100% true. My lovely wife and I enjoyed our sexy time before we were married, but a funny thing happened on our wedding day. My mentally ill mother awkwardly and loudly apologized to my mother-in-law that her daughter would never be sexually satisfied by me. As you can see, this is completely fucked up on so many levels. Not sure why she did it, but she's probably always had a weird, intense hatred towards sex that a son just shouldn't know about. She was probably sexually abused as a child, and her conservative Christian upbringing probably didn't help matters. Its effect was as if a gypsy had barged into our wedding, ripped off the head of a chicken, and sprinkled blood on my wife and I, while cursing our unborn offspring. I've had sex since and have successfully procreated, but it's not enjoyable. I feel like I'm an incompetent lump selfishly spilling his goo all over a willing yet undeserving victim. Why am I sending this to you? I'm not sure, but at least a fucked up podcast story is a good something that everybody can take something from. Anonymous, sent from Seven Proxies, Keith Relish. So, yes, it's exactly like a gypsy barging in to your wedding, ripping off the head of a chicken and sprinkling blood on your wife and yourself, in that it doesn't actually do anything. If you are having sexual dysfunction with your wife, which, by the way, welcome to a large swath of our culture. It is a cliche for a reason that sex after marriage is a challenge and something that you need to work at. But if that is the case, I don't think this is because your mom said something at your wedding. I think there's probably deeper elements. But again, I don't fucking know anything. I'm literally just a dickhead on a podcast. Jay writes, we talked about what women call fingering. He said, the best terms I've heard from a woman to describe masturbation is flicking off. I've overheard them say fingering themselves and rubbing my clit. Again, we have women emailing in. I need you guys to let me know what you call masturbation. We hear back from cryogenically frozen caveman. He was the one who wanted to lose his virginity to a hooker. He writes, I would just like to say that I really appreciated hearing your advice and had a lot of fun listening to your personal experience. I've decided to take your advice and wait it out. I'm going to keep losing weight and working on my self-confidence. Well, in honor of you, cryogenically frozen caveman, cryogenically frozen caveman decided he had to take this one to the locker room. Only in the off-season, with preparation, would he be able to succeed on the field. Little did he know that even as we were talking, the girl he would eventually have sex with was flicking off, thinking about what it would be like to thaw out a cryogenically frozen caveman. Anonymous writes, so here, if you want to write in, and you want to be anonymous, I'm going to just go ahead and give yourself an affiliation. So I'm going to go ahead, and if you just throw a diamond in your email, I'm just going to call you Anonymous Diamond. Anonymous Diamond writes, prostitution is obviously nothing new. Arguments could be made for or against legalization, but that's not what I want to talk about. A few years back, I was in Vegas, 5 a.m., a little bit drunk. Having done well in blackjack, I struck up a conversation with a very attractive young woman in the bar of the hotel I was staying at. Didn't take too long to figure out what line of work she was in, but having never talked to a professional before, I was intrigued. After chatting for a bit, I took the plunge, and it was great! I should say for the record that I was in my early 30s at the time. I lost my virginity at 16 and had my fair share since then. There's just something about hooking up with a pro that interested me, and I'm glad I did. I haven't since, and not being single anymore, I don't plan to. I know a lot of people look down on those things, on people who would sell their sex, but that makes no sense to me. It's just sex, unless you have feelings for the person you're shagging, right? I know there are many shades of gray here. Just wanted to chime in on the topic. Thanks for the stories. This is great. I'm really excited that we got the a strident pro hooker position. Love it. Thank you very, very much, Anonymous Diamond. Tim writes in, on the topic of weddings, I completely agree about the short ceremony. My thinking is, let's get to the food and music as fast as possible and try not to torture our friends and family who have given us gifts. That's why I was thrilled when I got married last year and my wife, Carrie, agreed with me on a short ceremony. Hold on, folks. Get ready for the best sentence I'm going to read this entire motherfucking podcast. We wrote our own vows, walked down the aisle, all the normal wedding stuff was completed in just 9 minutes. Pick it up. Oh yeah, because Tim's a thug. That comes from Tim Bell Jaws. Kiss Zero writes in, greetings, Jerry. I'll be honest. Let's get into the fail. This is the fail portion of the show. I asked you guys to write me times that you have failed in life. Failure is a very important part of life. Let's get into it. I'll be honest. I failed life pretty hard. Had a damn well playing job at Redbox. Had my dream job, and it did great until the job was too much. The entire southern half of Arkansas was my territory. Fun as it was, I had a stroke and health issues due to stress and forced me to seek alternatives. Here I sit on my fat ass in Portland, Oregon, trying to start over. Since that year in 2011, failed. No steady work. Contract work makes you feel sub-fucking-human, and now my marriage may be falling apart. Another thing I have failed in? ? Okay, this is a really depressing email, and that's fine. It's fine. Talking about failure here, saying exactly fucking lollipops, candy canes, all right? We ain't playing fucking Candyland. This is some real ass life failure, okay? So, all that being said, at some point, the failure is a lesson. It's not a fucking costume. Even if you fucking actually failed, which I think a lot of this stuff is debatable. I mean, like, you have a fucking stroke, man. Well, what the fuck you want, right? You ain't taking stroke pills. Like, you just fucking happen to have a stroke. It's a thing that happens. Even if all this shit is a failure, then fucking file it away, man. You don't gotta fucking gut the failure and take its fucking cloak and wear it around and do the wild motherfucking rumpus. Huh? You're in Portland, Oregon. That's a rad-ass town, man. You can fucking do a ton of awesome shit in there. And I got faith in you. I got faith in fucking Zero, man. Like, you're fucking named after a really rad Smashing Pumpkins song. You live in Portland. I think, listen, man, you got a lot of shit going for you. And you moved out of Arkansas. You moved from Arkansas to Portland, Oregon? Upgrade, baby. Upgrade. Another Anonymous Diamond writes, I hit all the big life milestones when I was pretty young. I started a career at 21, got married at 22. We had no big bills or responsibilities, so we had a lot of extra cash hanging around, and we were spending like drunken liberals or drunken Democrats for the Americans. We stopped having money when we bought a house, a car, and had a kid all before I was 24. I didn't get the standard starter home or fixer-upper or crappy car. I got nice stuff that cost a lot. Well, at some point, we had a drunken liberal spending At some point, when we had drunken liberal spending money, my wife got very used to me spoiling her, and I loved doing it. I loved it so much that I kept on spoiling her, even when we didn't have money. I was putting us in debt just so I could keep on spoiling her. To make an already very long story very short, it all came to a head this past weekend. She was stuck in a place where she needed money, and I had none to give. We got out of it, but I finally had to admit that I failed at providing for my family while spoiling my wife. I've since let her know that all the spoiling will have to stop for a few weeks. When it eventually starts up again, it's going to be scaled back. I finally admitted that I'd failed is going to make our lives so much better in the long run. I'm glad I finally did it. Now, I don't quite know what fucking spoiling means for this anonymous diamond. But anonymous, let me just tell you this. There's no winners for that kind of stuff. You know? Like, be nice, make her happy, you know? But there's more ways to do it than just monetarily. Or maybe there's not. Maybe you just got to fucking pop that blang. But I'm glad you're not going broke anymore. Don't go broke. Here's one thing that is spoiling her. You providing as a husband. Checkbox. If you uncheck that box, now you're really fucked up. You probably won't have a wife to spoil at all. And here is the epic email of the week. I feel like there needs to be some sort of here we go. All right. Epic email of the week comes from TJ. TJ writes, about 13 years ago, I decided to go and join the Air Force. I didn't have money for college, and I thought about getting the GI Bill because it would be a good thing. I chose a mechanically based job that I barely qualified for on the premise that I would learn mechanical skills to help me along in life. I signed up for 6 years over the normal four because I thought I could handle it and possibly make a career out of it, and it offered $11,000 to sign for bonus. After about 2 years, I was honorably discharged because I could not pass the written tests for my career field, and I did not want to become a security police. I moved back in with my parents, and not only did I not get the GI Bill benefits I went in for, I also had to pay back 2/3 of the signing money. At the time, I considered myself a failure. I fell into a depression, finding comfort only in playing games on my computer. This went on for about 6 months until I was pretty much forced to find a job. I worked for a couple different places and finally found a job at a company that needed somebody with security clearance, which I had due to being in the Air Force. I worked there for almost 5 years and got laid off, had another 7 months of unemployment, and racked up massive debt. After feeling like a failure once again, I finally found a job. It was a crap job and required that I move, but it was a job. 2 years after I got that job, I got an offer from one of the best places to work, and then says, shh, because I know where he works. And let me just tell you that if you were to name the 5 most exciting companies on the planet, it's usually in that list. It's an amazing job. He does an amazing job there. We go back to TJ's letter. If I had not failed in the Air Force, I would have not gotten the job that gave me the skills I needed to work on the job I have now. I'm glad all this happened because I'm better for it. I learned from this and many other failures that failing at something is not necessarily a bad thing. It's an opportunity to take advantage of and then learn and grow as a human being. Sorry for being so goddamn long, but it felt good to write this. You want to know what? TJ, thank you! Because you are the fucking poster child of what I was talking about. This motherfucker not only fucked up, he knew he fucked his own life up. He's the one who bit off more than he can chew. He's the one that had to move in with his parents. He's the one that went from fucking massive debt to higher pile of massive debt. One job he didn't fucking like to another job he didn't fucking like. And you want to know what? All that shit made him better, because every time he stuck his chin out, he might have gotten popped right in his fucking face, but he fucking learned something from it, and that is what counts. T TJ, the Justin Robert Young podcast salutes you. Everybody is standing up right now. A coliseum of lonely motherfuckers who have failed and fucked up in their own lives are all on their feet clapping for you, TJ, because you are the spirit animal of this very show. You are the spirit animal of the lonely internet denizen who looks at their life and says, I can do better if I wasn't such a fuck up. You are the voice that tells them, yes, you can do better, and you are going to do it because you're such a fuck-up. Find this podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or some other shit. Email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com, or Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Justin R. Young is the handle for all three of those. Make sure you put jury in the subject line if you email me, and you can always hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. We're doing this podcast early because we have WWE's Hell in a Cell coming up. I'm going to do a whole big live stream on that. Fucking spoiler alert, my voice might totally go out by the middle of it. But as we always say, should you find yourself in the doldrums? Should you find yourself cold and alone? Should you find yourself without anybody to turn to? Should you find yourself in a recursive state of believing that there is nothing for you? Well, friends, I want you all to reach out to each other and understand that psychically, your pal, Justin Robert Young, is imploring you to please don't die!